every boy and girl. No one is better for the way that you think. So open up your mind, cause we're on the brink. If you need to take down the wall, that's a place to
WMFO Medford. Good morning. It's the 21st of September, 2022. My name is Arthur, and this is the Grand Hour Revival. I'm only saying such things because I haven't been here in 4 months. But I'm going to go ahead and cut to the chase. This morning, I'm starting off with a Gangbusters. This is titled The Case of the Cumberland Safecracker, which had an original air date of the 27th of March, 1948. Thanks for listening. And bear with me. I worked through a couple of bugs here. Thanks.
Authentic police case history.
Tonight, Gangbusters presents the case of the Cumberland safecracker, who refused to give even his confederates and the girl who loved him a square deal, but who found that an old-fashioned square dance was his own undoing.
Gangbusters has asked the Honorable Lynn Bomar, Commissioner of Safety, State of Tennessee, to narrate by proxy tonight's case. Commissioner Bomar, you were telling me before the program started that Ray Ernest was one of the most cautious criminals you ever ran into.
That's right, Les Griffith. And in his caution, he appeared to be quiet and pleasant-mannered. For instance, in a small Tennessee town one night about 2 years ago, an old-fashioned square dance was being held in the volunteer firehouse to raise money for new uniforms for the school band. Nearly every citizen was there, and not a few strangers dropped in for the fun. Everyone was in the spirit of the thing. Even the night marshal, who comprised the entire police force after 9 o'clock, was no exception. He had for a partner the prettiest girl on the floor.
You'll have this square dancing down to a T before the night's over.
Now, folks, let me have your attention.
I wonder what old Mifflin's got on his mind.
Now, quiet, please, folks. We up here who've been entertaining you get thirsty just like everybody else. So we're going to take a little recess while we get back to the rear of the firehouse where refreshments is on sale. Now, in the meantime, you can do the other kind of dance. We're going to put on a fine dance record for you. Now, don't go away. We'll be back in 5 minutes for a good old Virginia reel.
It doesn't seem right to play swing music here, does it, Marshal?
No, it sure don't. Say, Miss Lois, You must be awful thirsty after all that workout.
Oh, well, I...
Suppose I go back and get you a Coke or sarsaparilla or something.
Oh, well, I'd sure like one, but I hate to bother you, Marshal.
Bother? No bother. Now, don't go away. I'll be right back.
All right. Ray, you finished?
Not yet. Give us a chance. I told you this would take us a long time.
We better hurry. The marshal has to start on another round in about half an hour.
All right, we'll be out by then. We'll be out in 20 minutes.
Does it look like a lot?
A lot for a post office. Keep this hit cop occupied. I better get back.
Ray.
What?
It's awful risky. Everybody in the state looking for you in the post office being right next door to the dance here.
I knew what it was. It'll be okay. Now, don't worry.
Be careful, Ray.
I'll be careful. You just keep that marshal busy. That's your job. I'll see you. Come on, Goldie. Let's get back to it.
Right. Oh, this tops them all, Ray. Knocking off the post office safe right under the nose of everybody in town.
Okay, okay. You don't have to scream it to the rafters. Get the door.
Well, you're not leaving us so early.
No, just going out for a breath of air. We'll be back.
Good, good. There's lots coming up yet.
Fine, we'll see you.
Go on, Goldie.
I guess Mitch ought to have the safe about ready to place the suit now, Ray.
We ought to. He's got plenty of time.
Oh, this should be a good one.
It will be. And I sure wish I could stick around to see that marshal's face when they open that post office tomorrow. He's square dancing himself right out of a job.
Good morning, Captain Jackson. One of your state highway patrolmen said you were here.
Yes, Riggs. We're taking over the investigation.
Well, I would have been here to see you sooner, Captain, but I was writing out my resignation to the mayor.
Well, don't be so hasty, Riggs. It wasn't your fault.
Well, it wasn't anybody else's. I'm getting paid to be marshal at night. I should be keeping a watch on the town instead of dancing the square dance.
You made your rounds when you were supposed to.
Yeah, I didn't stop them from breaking into the post office.
I spoke to Mayor Riggs. He understands the post office might have been burglarized even if there weren't a square dance at the firehouse.
Oh.
So just wait a couple of days with the resignation. Maybe we'll catch him.
And maybe we won't. Oh, I swear, Captain, I'll never again be taken in by a pretty face. How would I know she was one of the gang?
Well, nobody could have known it. We think it was Ray Ernest again.
Huh?
He's pulled tricks like this all over the state. They've burglarized over 50 banks and post offices, so you're not the only victim.
Well, they sure are a slick bunch, Captain.
Well, this Ray Ernest is. The rest of them we don't know too much about.
Well, I'd sure like to get my hands on that fella. Just for 5 minutes, I'd like to get my hands on him.
So would we. But so far, we're not very close to him. The best information we have says they make their headquarters in Nashville. Where in Nashville? Well, that's anybody's guess.
Captain, if I hold up on that resignation of mine, could I help out on the investigation?
Well, you're entitled to, Riggs. There's been a burglary in your jurisdiction. You've got a right to participate.
Well, I'm only a small-town marshal, Captain. I don't know too much, but I can work with you in the daytime and still do my job here in town at night.
Well, that's a lot of time to put in.
Well, I reckon I owe the time.
All right, Riggs, if you feel that way about it, I'll be glad to have your help. And I think we can find plenty for you to do.
All right, Mitch. Right up close to the tracks. As close as you can get.
Okay.
That's good. Lights out.
Ray, there's Goldie.
Yeah, I see him. Okay, Lois, get up front with Mitch. If you see anybody that looks like cops, start necking.
It don't have to be no order.
Doesn't it?
As far as I'm concerned, it's got to be an order.
Then it is. If I need you, I'll send Goldie back here. Go on, Lois, get up front.
You been, Ray? Little bit's getting nervous. He wants to pull out.
So he wants to pull out?
Yeah. That's the shack he was in, Ray. Now listen, this guy Little Bit knows what he's got. He's going to ask a lot of dough.
Well, he won't get a lot. Bum that lives in a shanty by the freight yards will settle next to nothing.
Not this guy.
Go on, knock.
Yeah? What you want?
It's me again, Goldie. Open up.
Oh, yes, yes. Good. Come in.
Boss, this is Little Bit.
All right.
Make yourselves to home.
Get some light in here, will you?
I ain't got much oil left. I was saving it.
For what? Get that lantern lit.
Give me a match, Goldie.
You're crying out loud. You're too tight to use matches.
I run out.
Here. Here's a match. Now light the lantern.
I don't see no good reason, but...
That's better.
You think so? I don't believe ever I had the pleasure.
No, you didn't. And what's more, you're not going to get it.
Come on, little bit. Show the boss the gimmick.
It's going to cost you a pocketful.
Let's see it.
Okay. I got it here. I got it here under my cot.
It's a beaut, boss. Never thought we'd get our hands on one like it.
Okay, quiet.
Here she is. Complete. Regular, genuine, high-horsepower drill. The 6 diamond-tip drill bits.
Yeah.
I like that, boss.
What are you asking, little bit?
Well, seeing as I got an idea for what you're going to use it, I don't guess 500 be too much.
500?
Never mind what we're going to use it for, little bit. And 500 is out of the question.
I know guys that'll pay it.
Come on, little bit. You swiped it out of the roundhouse. Get reasonable, will you?
Goldie.
Yeah?
Go out to the car. Tell Lois and Mitch to come in here.
Hey, now, look here. I can't go showing this thing to everybody. It's hot as a jailhouse in July. Now, you want it, or don't you?
Yeah, I want it. Go on, Goldie.
Okay, I'll get it.
A little bit. I'll give you $10. Cash.
Oh, now, nothing doing. This drill's worth thousands to you.
$10.
Oh, go on, get out of here. We can't do no business.
You'll take $10 and be glad you got it.
Let me loose. Let me loose.
If I wanted to, I'd pick up that drill and walk out of here, and you wouldn't say a word to anybody. But I'm giving you a break.
Yeah, but $10 ain't nothing for my trouble. And that drill can cut through anything you want it to, like churn butter.
A little bit. I'm being generous.
Oh, now, I went to a lot of bother for that bad drill. Almost got myself catch getting it. Ain't everybody can swipe something like that out of a roundhouse.
Yeah, boy.
Lois, stand over there. Quiet. Goldie, Mitch, come here.
It's some drill.
You're darn right it is.
Okay. Here, a little bit. I'll be kind to you. Here's a fast 20 for you.
Oh, that ain't enough.
It's plenty. Goldie.
Yeah?
You think you can find a through freight south?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay, Little Bit's taking a vacation. Tie him up good and throw him in a boxcar.
Hey, now I don't want no trouble.
Grab him.
Come on, you.
Let go.
Get him out of here.
Hold him, bitch. Come on. Come on.
If he gets fresh, slug him over the head and take back the 20.
Come on, now get out.
Close the door, Lloyd.
Yeah. Well, you certainly took care of him. The three of you.
Forget it. I don't own around where he can answer questions if he's picked up.
What can he tell them?
If the cops know we got a drill like this, they've got an idea what we're after.
You mean you can cut through those burglar-proof safes with this thing?
You bet I can. And the first one's going to be the vault in that bank at College Grove. I've just been itching to get a look inside that box. And here's where that itch gets scratched.
And so, Les, while the police were desperately trying to get on his trail, the Tennessee safecracker, Ray Ernest, acquired a power drill with diamond-tipped bits and planned to expand his operations to even larger and stronger safes. But he didn't realize that the steel nerves of a safecracker are often more brittle than the vaults on which he works.
You were telling us, Commissioner Bomar, that the gang of burglars led by Ray Ernest was responsible for cracking the safes of more than 50 banks and post offices in small towns of Tennessee and bordering states.
That's right, Les. And the police were making a strenuous effort to track him down. But the investigation under Captain J.J. Jackson of the Tennessee State Highway Patrol was proceeding slowly because of the widespread character of the criminal's operations. In the meantime, Ernest had acquired a special power drill for the purpose of cracking heavy safes. Early one morning, he and two of his confederates were inside a small bank in Middle Tennessee, hard at work on the safe.
Okay, cut them up. All right, set the cap in there.
Okay.
Mitch.
Yeah, Ray?
Come get this stuff out of the way. We're going to blow it.
Yep. It's done for me. You've been in here long enough.
All right, get the jump together.
Okay.
How's it going, Goldie?
It's about ready.
Yeah. No. Set that cap deeper. Deeper.
Look, I
let
don't...
me handle it.
Okay.
Goldie, grab the rug.
All right.
Tools all clear?
Just about.
Okay, make it snappy.
Hey, all right. There's the rug.
All right, come on. Put it over the front of the safe.
And don't rush me. I work cheap.
Okay, up with it. That's it. I got a muffler, some. All right, get back there. I'll light the fuse.
Come on, Mitch. Behind the desk.
Right, Mitch.
Here goes.
Yep.
The fast fuse.
Don't I know it?
What is
it? Okay, it ain't over yet. Hold it. Now hold it.
Come on.
Beautiful.
Let's get busy. That noise could have been heard for a mile.
Yeah, right.
Mitch, signal Lois we'll be out in 5 minutes. And keep a lookout at that door. And if anybody gets nosy, let them have it.
Right.
Hello.
Briggs?
Yeah?
Captain Jackson.
Yes, Captain.
Ray Ernest and his mob have just knocked over the bank at College Grove.
Was that so?
Now, how about checking tourist cabins in your neighborhood for us?
Sure, Captain. I'll get right on it.
Wait a minute. When'd you get to bed?
Well, what time is it now?
4 a.m.
Oh, about an hour ago, but don't worry about it, Captain. I'll get right on it. I'll be okay.
Dig. All night long, we dig to get in the safe. Now we dig a hole in the ground.
Go on, Mitch. That ain't there deep enough.
Yeah, take the shovel. You try it a while.
Thanks.
Go on, dig. Ray sees you laying down on the job. He's liable to bury you in a hole.
That ain't so funny.
No. It ain't, is it?
You know, there was nearly 30 grand in that safe. Split four ways, it don't come to so much.
Yeah. I thought this was a screwy idea, stop in the middle of getaway. Go over in the woods, he says. Dig a hole, bury the dough, bury the tools.
You know, he and Lois could be out there in the car figuring out just how they're going to do the whole thing. We get the hole dug, Ray shoots the both of us, and we drop in the grave we dug.
Yeah. What's this all of his about the wheel? There's nothing wrong with that wheel. If you ask me, Ray just wanted a chance to work this out with Lois.
I wouldn't put it past him.
Look, Goldie. He makes a move.
Oh, I wait for him to make a move.
You mean?
Sure. I wouldn't mind getting rid of that rotten...
Watch it. Here he comes. Go ahead and take...
Okay.
That's it. That's about got it.
How you boys doing?
Okay.
All right, that's deep enough.
Now, you think so, Ray?
Plenty deep enough. Let's get busy. I want to be moving before it's late.
Yeah, that's a good idea.
Look, Ray.
I don't want to hear any more about it. We buried the dough and the tools. When we need it, we come back. I'll get that stuff in there, Goldie.
Wait a minute, Ray.
Go on. Get it in there.
Okay.
Look over that steering wheel. It's okay now.
Is it?
I said it was. Look, I got an idea out of where this safe. The cops know me. They don't know either you or Lois too well.
So?
You take the car, ride back to Nashville. You won't be bothered.
And what about you?
I'll hitchhike. I'll get there the best I can.
That's awful generous of you, Ray.
It's plain it's safe.
What's Lois think about it?
I didn't ask her. She's sleeping in the car. It's the best way for all of us. Now go on, finish burying that stuff, then I'll get started.
You mean started walking?
That's what I mean.
What goes, Ray? This is a screwy deal.
I told you I wanted to play it safe.
Yeah. Safe enough to come back by yourself and dig up the dough?
Oh. So that's what's on your mind.
What else would be on our mind?
You're nuts. Now put the dough in there and get it covered up.
Not on your life, Ray. There's something else going in that hole.
Hey.
That's it. Don't move.
Oh, pulling a gun on me, huh? What kind of a double cross is this?
Same kind you were fixing to hand us.
Don't move, Ray. Don't move or you get it sooner than you expected.
Well, okay, if this is the way you want it. But you're nuts. How far do you think you'd get without me?
We'd get 30 grand worth of fire.
Now, look. Be reasonable, will you?
I want him dead!
Why'd you shoot him?
Why didn't you?
If you had a gun, that's why. Go on, give it to him now.
Throw him over the hole first. It'll be cleaner.
Yeah. Oh, get him.
Okay.
Yeah, look at him. The big boys. Got dirt in his face.
Go on, give it to him.
Well, what are you waiting for?
Look.
Come on, shoot.
Mitch, what do we need a murder rat for?
He was going to bury us.
I don't know. The idea he had wasn't bad.
Go on, will you?
We'll have to kill Lois, too, you know. She's nuts about him. She'll run to the first cop she sees. This way, we could just kiss her goodbye in Nashville and have the whole 30 grand to ourselves.
What about him?
I'll fix him so he's good for a couple hours here. We'll take a long trip. He'll never find us. Why look for trouble with a murder rat when this is just as good?
Okay, maybe you got something. Go on, get the work on him.
Give me that shovel.
Yeah, right.
I've been wanting to do this for a long time. Cross me.
Okay, okay. Cut it out or you work too long.
Come on, let's get moving.
Yeah. Well, I don't get it.
We told you, Lois. Ray said the safest thing was for him to hitchhike and meet us in Nashville.
That's right.
There's something fishy about the whole deal.
What's fishy about it? We were digging a hole. He was fixing a wheel in a car. He comes to us and tells us the whole idea. We bury the dough. He goes off in the woods. That's all there is to it.
What'd you do to him?
What do we do to him? What are you talking about?
I mean, you guys are pulling a fast one.
Hey.
It's the law.
Come on, Goldie, drive.
Oh, brother.
Faster, will you? Faster.
They're catching up to us.
Watch the bridge up ahead.
I see it.
Bridge is pretty narrow.
I'll shoot at him when I get closer. Hey.
What's the matter?
Well, it's still, I can't hold it.
What's the breeze? We're going over.
I can't hold it.
Don't leave.
Just tells me your car broke down out of town a ways.
Yeah, that's right. I had a little wreck.
Oh.
Not much damage, except I got quite a bump on the head and my clothes full of mud.
Well, I'm working with the State Highway Patrol. Can I be helpful?
No. I called the wrecker from Nashville. They're coming out after the car.
Are you going to Nashville?
Yeah. As soon as I finish my coffee.
Well, I'm going there myself this morning. I'll give you a lift.
I'm much obliged, but I guess I can manage.
Well, you might have a little trouble, mister. There's quite a bit of excitement around. Bank at College Grove was broken into last night. The roadblocks all over.
No kidding.
You won't have no trouble with me, though. They know who I am. They let me right through.
You know, I think I'll take you up on your offer, if you don't mind.
Not at all. I'm glad to have the company. Riggs is my name.
Yeah, mine's Brown. Bruce Brown.
Okay, Mr. Brown. As soon as you finish your coffee.
Yeah, I'll be right with you.
No, a car went over the bridge on the pike early this morning.
Yeah?
Yeah, we think it had some of the burglars in it. They're still trying to fish it out.
Were they drowned?
Looks that way. They'll know for sure in a couple of hours.
Well, if it was the bank robbers, I guess they had it coming.
I guess they did.
Well, I'm all set.
Okay, then let's go. I'd like to make Nashville by noon.
Okay with me. Sooner the better.
Sir, we've been having quite a little trouble with them safe crackers. Busted into more than 50 safes. Most of them in small towns like mine.
What's that so?
Banks, post offices, warehouses, everything. But I reckon this is the end of them.
Well, if they drowned, it must be.
They even broke into the post office in my town. Same night we had the square dance at the firehouse. What a nerve those fellas had. Post office is right next door to where the dance was.
No kidding.
Yes, sir. We were having a great time in there. All the while they were breaking open the safe in the post office. No, I almost lost my job over it.
That's too bad.
The mayor says it wasn't my fault, though. So did my friend, Captain Jackson, the State Highway Patrol.
Well, you were... Hey, what's that up ahead there?
It's one of the roadblocks. We won't have no trouble, though.
I thought you said those criminals were drowned.
Well, we're not really sure yet. Can't take any chances.
I guess you're right.
Now, just slow down a little so they can see who I am.
Yeah, that'll be a good idea.
Hi, Riggs.
Hello there, Sergeant. Yeah, it's Sergeant Bailey of the State Highway Patrol.
Mm-hmm. Did you have to stop?
No, I didn't, but I'd just like to say hello to my friend, Captain Jackson.
Oh.
Make yourself comfortable, Mr. Brown. I won't be a minute.
Oh, take your time.
Go on, Riggs.
Fine, Sergeant, fine. Captain. Captain Jackson.
Oh, hello, Ray. Anything doing?
Captain, you want Ray Ernest?
What?
Sitting in my car.
What? Joking.
No, that's him, all right. Picked him up in a restaurant.
Oh, come on. Okay, Ernest, don't move.
Hey.
Come on. Get out of there.
Okay. I'm getting...
No gun on him, Captain.
He's lucky.
Well, I guess this is it, huh?
All except a few little details. You can tell us, for instance, why you tampered with the steering gear of your friend's car so they'd lose control.
You'll have a hard time proving that.
Maybe you wanted all that loot for yourself. That's how you figured to get it.
Maybe. But you couldn't prove that either.
We'll see.
Well, Ernest, as far as I go, but if you want to go to Nashville, the captain will take you the rest of the way.
You bet your life I will, Ernest. I want you in the strongest jail in the state.
So, Les, that was the end of the criminal activities of Ray Ernest and his gang. Ernest, the sole survivor of the gang, is now serving a long term in the federal penitentiary at Atlanta, after which he'll have to account for similar sentences in the states of Tennessee, Kentucky, and Indiana.
Well, thank you, Commissioner Bomar, and congratulations to all the officers, federal, state, and local, who participated in the investigation leading to the arrest and conviction of this troublesome criminal. Tonight's case was dramatized by Stanley Niss and directed by William Sweets, with John Larkin and Will Gear in leading roles. Les Griffiths speaking for Don Gardner. Gangbusters is a Phillips H. Lord production. Phillips H. Lord
Wake
production.
And
ladies and gentlemen, I...
Text and eat. Mm-mm. Text and catch the bus. Text and miss your stop.
Wait.
Text and be late to work.
Sorry, I'm late.
Text and work. Text and pretend to work. Text and act surprised when someone calls you out for not working.
Who, me?
Text and meet up with a friend you haven't seen in forever.
Hi.
Oh, hey.
Text and complain that they're on their phone the whole time. Text and listen to them complain that you're on your phone the whole time.
Ugh.
Text and whatever. But when you get behind the wheel, give your phone to a passenger. Put it in the glove box. Just don't text and drive. Visit StopTextsStopWrecks.org. A public service announcement brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
Thank you, Ad Council. So we heard Gangbusters there at the top of the hour. That was titled Case of the Cumberland Safecracker, with an original air date of the 27th of March, 1948. I got that off of a post office compilation from one of my co-conspirators with radio, because I had a little issue with post office, but that was just really breaking into the post office's safe. Gangbusters originally aired from 1935 to 1957. It was titled G-Men at first, but I guess J. Edgar Hoover didn't approve of it. I was reading through some of the notes on the show. I guess Art Carney was an actor. He wasn't singled out in that specific episode we just heard. And Norman Schwarzkopf's father was one of the narrators at one point. I don't know what season. But next up, going with a double police drama. Again, this is like a thumbing my nose at the post office. This is Dragnet, starring Jack Webb. Huge fan of Jack Webb's here on the Grand Hour. This is titled Big Mail. This had an original air date of the 15th of May, 1952. My name is Arthur, and you're listening to the Grand Hour here on 91.5 FM WMFO, Medford Tufts Freeform Radio.
Ladies and gentlemen, I'd like to read a telegram we just received. Final ballot tabulation shows Dragnet has won Michael Award for Best Radio and also for Best Television Mystery Program in 1952. 20,090 qualified members participated in nominations and final ballot. Congratulations and best wishes. Ed Bobley, President, Academy of Radio and Television Arts and Sciences. The story you are about to hear is true. The names have been changed to protect the innocent.
Fatima Cigarettes, best of all king-size cigarettes, brings you Dragnet on both radio and television.
Dragnet.
You're a detective sergeant. You're assigned a robbery detail. A United States mail truck is held up and robbed. 22 sacks of registered mail are taken. The holdup men escape. There's no lead to their identity. Your job? Get them. Compare Fatima with any other king-size cigarette.
Yes, compare Fatima with any other king-size cigarette.
One, Fatima's length filters the smoke 85 millimeters for your protection.
Two, Fatima's length cools the smoke for your protection.
Three, Fatima's length gives you those extra puffs, 21% longer than standard cigarette size.
Fatima gives you more for your money.
And in king-size Fatima, you get an extra mild and soothing smoke, plus the added protection of Fatima quality. Buy Fatima in the bright, sunny yellow pack. Best of all, king-size cigarettes. Dragnet, the documented drama of an actual crime. For the next 30 minutes, in cooperation with the Los Angeles Police Department, you will travel step by step on the side of the law through an actual case transcribed from official police files. From beginning to end, from crime to punishment, Dragnet is the story of your police force in action.
It was Monday, August 4th. It was hot in Los Angeles. We were working the night watch out of robbery detail. My partner's Frank Smith. The boss is Captain Didion. My name's Friday. I was on the way back from communications, and it was 11.05 p.m. when I got to room 27A, the squad room.
That's it. There wasn't anything else to do. Some had a gun pressed right up against the back of my head. I didn't dare make a move.
All right, bud, take it easy. Joe?
Nothing yet. The broadcast and the APB are out on them. How are you feeling, Houston?
Not bad. Still a little shaky. How about my partners, Frank and Adolf? Are they hurt bad?
No, a couple of bad bumps in the head. They'll be all right by morning. Doctor's treating them now over at Georgia Street.
Can we talk to them tonight?
Doctor doesn't think it'd be a good idea. We can wait till morning. You look a little pale, Houston. You sure we can't get you something?
No, I'll be all right. Still a little shaky, that's all. It's the worst scare I ever got in my life. Thought I was gone for sure.
How about a glass of water?
Yeah, okay, if you got it.
You bet. You got a penny, Frank?
Yeah.
Okay. Just talking about the getaway car when you came in, Joe.
Yeah.
Houston here is pretty sure he was right the first time. It was a dark blue sedan, late model.
Mm-hmm. Any idea at all what make it was, Bud?
I wouldn't like to say definitely. I don't want to mix you up. I got half an idea it was a GM car, maybe a Buick or an Olds. I can't say for sure, though.
Well, here's your water.
Oh.
You didn't get a look at the license, huh? You're sure of that, are you?
No, I didn't see it at all. The whole thing went too fast for me.
Uh-huh.
I appreciate this.
I got it. Robbery, Smith.
Yes, sir.
Oh, yeah, Inspector.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I see. Yeah, we'll be here for a while. Yeah, 27A. Right, thank you. Goodbye.
You got it.
Post Inspector Joe. He's on his way over now.
That's fine. Hey, Bud, when you started your run with that mail truck tonight, you have any inkling at all that there was something wrong?
I don't think I got you, Sergeant. What do you mean?
Well, I mean, did you happen to notice anyone suspicious hanging around the post office out by the loading platform, maybe? Something?
No, nobody.
How about on your way to the Union Station? You notice any cars following your mail truck?
No, if they were, I think I'd have noticed it. I usually keep an eye out when we're making a run. It's a habit I got into, I guess.
How long have you been driving a mail truck, Bud?
About 5 years. I've only been handling the registered mail the last couple of months, so.
Did your truck leave the post office on schedule tonight?
Yeah, right on the dot. We followed the other trucks out. You see, the trucks that pick up the ordinary mail, they leave first, and then our truck leaves right after them. We only handle registered stuff.
I see.
The same routine tonight, no different.
You're the driver of the truck, that right, Bud?
Yeah, that's all I do is drive. Frank's a clerk, Adolf's a guard. That's regulations. On trucks that handle just the straight mail, the driver's the only one aboard. Registered mail trucks got to have three men, the driver, the clerk, and the guard.
Yeah, we know. You usually drive the same route from the post office to the Union Station, do you?
Yeah, we go the same way every night, straight down Temple Street, turn right and go down Ferguson to Alameda, then over Alameda to Union Station, make the pickup or the delivery, and then we come back the same way to the post office.
And that's the route you followed tonight, huh?
Yes, sir, that's it. Only we didn't make it back this time.
I'd like to make sure we got this straight now, Bud. Do you mind checking us out on exactly what happened from the time you got to the Union Station?
No, I don't mind.
Well, try to relax if you can. Just take your time. Try to remember everything, will you?
Say, would you mind very much if I called my wife first? I know I'm going to be late getting home. I don't want her to worry.
You bet. Right ahead, Bud.
What's your number? I'll dial it. Thanks. It's Pleasant 29321.
Okay.
You got a family, Bud?
Yeah, three kids. Mother-in-law, too. She lives with us.
Here you are, Bob.
Oh, thanks. Lorraine? Oh, hi, Mother. Did I get you out of bed? No, nothing's wrong. I just called to say I'd be a little late tonight. I didn't want Lorraine to worry. No place. No, I'm not in a bar. Why do you have to say things like that? If that's the way you feel, all right, just tell Lorraine, will you? Hello? Mother, boss, you never get off your back. Sorry to interrupt, officer.
It's all right, Bud. You want to go ahead now?
Let's see. You wanted to know what happened after we left Union Station?
Yeah, that's right. What time was it when you left the station?
Right after we loaded the mail sacks on the truck, 28 sacks, all registered. We took off.
What time was that?
Scheduled time, 9:56. Left the station, headed for the P.O., drove the same route, along Alameda to Ferguson, then up to Ferguson. As I turned the corner, I picked up their headlights in the rearview mirror. Then they started crowding us. I knew something was wrong. Too late to do anything then.
They pulled up alongside, forced you into the curb,
then? Yeah, the darkest part of the street, too. It was a big sedan, I know that. A four-door job. Dark blue, and it was a late model, I'm sure.
You notice anything special about the car, Bud? I mean, maybe a dented fender, some special accessories on it, anything like that?
No, nothing I'd be sure of. I was too busy trying to keep going, get out of their way. I didn't have much of a chance. They forced us up on the sidewalk. I saw a telephone pole coming at me. I had to stop.
What happened then?
I threw a bright spotlight on it. Blinded me for a minute. And these three men got out of the car and came at us, guns in their hands. It all happened in a couple of seconds. I was never so scared in my life.
Did you get a good look at any of the men?
No, I didn't. It was pretty dark. The place they stopped us at, I couldn't be sure I'd recognize any of them if I saw them again.
Well, what'd the men do when they came up to the truck?
Put their guns in our face, made us get out of the truck and climb into their car, the blue sedan. And one of them got in the mail truck behind the wheel. His name was Sid. I heard that. One of the men said, "Follow us in the truck, Sid. You know where to go." That's what he said.
You happen to hear any other names?
No, that was the only one. And Sid seemed to be the boss. He was giving the orders anyway.
They put you and your two partners in the back seat of their car?
Yeah, and the two thieves were in the front seat. One drove and the other held a gun on us. He kept the lower part of his face covered with a handkerchief. You'd see the mail truck following a little ways behind us.
Mm-hmm. They drove you straight down to Alameda, is that right?
Yes, sir. Like I told you before, I think it was about a mile and a half. And they turned off right into that alley by the warehouse, same place you found it.
Uh-huh.
I figured that was the end. They got us out of the car, Frank and me and Adolf. Made us line up against a brick wall there, hands up in the air, facing the wall, and then they opened up the back of the truck and transferred the mail sacks to their car.
Well, any conversation while all this was going on?
Not too much, no. You see, one of them, I think that was Sid, he covered us with a gun, a shotgun. The other two moved the mail sacks from the truck to the car, and every once in a while the Sid would tell him, "Come on faster, we're short on time." I think that's what he said.
Well, why'd they slug your two partners, this Frank and Adolf? Any reason for that?
It's coming to that. You see, when they got all the mail sacks in their car and they were ready to pull out, the other two guys came over to Sid, and one of them said, "What are we waiting for? Let's kill him and get out of here."
Yeah?
Right away, our clerk, Frank, he began pleading with him not to kill us. I guess Frank was thinking of his wife and his little kid.
Mm-hmm. How'd the thieves react?
Well, they slugged him, cracked him with a gun, and hit him a couple of times. Frank went down. He started crying. Just a young kid, you know.
Yeah, we know.
Well, this other guy told Sid again. He said, "Come on, let's kill him. Let's get out of here." He's the one who had something wrong with his voice. It was real husky, you know, like he had a cold.
Uh-huh. Go ahead.
Well, I got to say, this Sid wasn't much for killing us. He told the other guy he didn't think they ought to kill us because they'd set him up for a murder rap besides mail robbery. The other two guys told Sid, "What's the difference? If we're going to rob the mails, we might as well go all the way." And they argued about it a minute or so.
Yeah.
And my other partner, Adolf, he began to plead with him. He said, "Please don't kill us." Sick to my stomach. I couldn't even talk.
What'd you say?
I said I was sick to my stomach. I couldn't even talk.
Is that when they slugged you at all?
Yeah. This Sid slugged him. He hit him worse than he did Frank. He kept beating him and beating him. I still hear it. I just got sick. Well, make a long story short, this Sid finally said, "We'll give him a gambler's chance. We'll toss for it."
Hmm?
That's just what he said. He said, "We'll toss for it." And he says, "Hey, you." And he motioned to me. He said, "I'm going to toss a coin. You call it. If you lose, we kill the three of you. If you win, we don't." So help me, it's the truth. I didn't know what to do. I tried to talk them out of it.
Yeah.
And they wouldn't listen. The Sid told me either I called it or they'd kill us then. Took a coin out of his pocket and flipped it in the air. I called heads. Guess I don't have to tell you. I won.
Something new for the book.
How'd it go after that, Bud?
Tied up the three of us and drove off in their car. About 15 minutes later, that night watchman found us and called you fellas. You know the rest.
And you're sure you wouldn't be able to identify any of the holdup men if you saw them again?
No.
Real sure?
No, their general build, that's the only thing I'm sure of. This fellow Sid was tall on the thin side, about 45, 50 years old. The other two were fairly short, stocky. Like I told you, that one fellow's voice, deep and husky, I think I'd know him if I heard him talk again.
Excuse me a minute.
Robbery Friday. Yeah, Walt. How's it going?
Uh-huh.
Yeah, not much doubt.
All right.
Fine. Yeah, fine.
Well, the getaway car, they just found it.
Where'd you?
Up in Elysian Park, just off Riverside.
What about the mail sacks? They find them, too?
Yeah, every one of them. Empty.
According to the report we'd received, the getaway car was found parked in a clump of shrubbery on the edge of Elysian Park, about half a mile from Riverside Drive. All of the 28 registered mail sacks were found scattered in and around the car, and with the exception of a few pieces of mail, the sacks were empty. A crew from the crime lab was dispatched immediately to the scene to check the car and the mail sacks for fingerprints and to cover the entire area for physical evidence. The mail truck was also gone over for prints at the point where it had been located. The officers at the scene, Sergeants Bitteroff and Gonzalez, continued the investigation on their end. 11:50 p.m. After the inspector from the post office department arrived, we continued our interview with Bud Houston, one of the three victims of the mail truck robbery. We ended the interview a few minutes after midnight, and Houston was driven to his home. The following morning, along with the postal inspector, Frank Smith and I talked to the other two victims, the clerk and the guard, who were with Houston at the time of the holdup. They could add nothing to what their partner had already told us. The investigation went on. Every possible angle was checked and rechecked. 3 days passed. Nothing. Thursday, August 7th, 5:40 p.m. Hi, Joe. How'd you make out?
Oh, it's sour. Nothing at all. The guy wasn't even in town the night of the holdup, and he can prove it. Do you have any luck?
No better than yours.
I might just as well have taken the day off for all the good we did. Nothing from the stats office, huh?
No. Last one we asked for won't be ready till tomorrow. It's getting a little embarrassing, Joe. We got them checking practically every robbery card they've got. M.O. description, only a few of them come close. We've already ruled them out as possible. The one you just checked on, that was the last.
About does it. Might as well close up shop for the day, huh? You ready?
Yeah, let's go.
All right.
I'll sign us out.
All right.
Okay, Joe. That mail truck driver, Houston, he and his partners were in checking through our mug books again this afternoon.
Oh, yeah, I forgot about that. Did they come up with anything?
Well, I spotted one mugshot, parolee from Quentin, only a partial ident. Three of them couldn't even agree on that. I checked on the man. He's back in Quentin for a month.
I can't say the three of them aren't cooperative. They've sure been working for us, haven't they?
Hey, Joe, you in a hurry? How about washing up?
Yeah, all right.
Been a long time since we've had one start as slow as this one.
Well, you'll ruin the worst, Frank.
Oh, I mean right from the start, Joe. You find a getaway car, plenty of prints on it. Can't get a make on any of them.
Yeah.
Find out the car was stolen. We check the owner. Location, leads nowhere. Prints on the steering wheel of the mail truck, parts of the mail sack. Still no make. How tough can it get?
Well, they might have something when their kickback comes through from Washington. The holdup men weren't amateurs. We know that.
Joe, you check with Gonzalez and Bitteroff today. I didn't see him.
Yeah. They're not doing much better than the rest of us. They got an informant hot on the thing. He's supposed to have some work for him tomorrow and a couple of possibles.
Say, how about the money taken from the mail they got? List of the serial numbers on the bills going out to everybody?
Yeah, a revised list went out late last night. Copy sent all over the country.
Ray?
Yeah, Mac, we're in here.
Call for you, Squad.
Okay, thanks. Be right there.
Okay, let's go.
All right.
Hope this call means something, Joe. Wouldn't mind going late tonight.
What do you mean?
My sister-in-law, Florence, she's having me and the wife over for dinner, some kind of fancy pork dish.
What's the matter with that?
She never cooks anything until it's done. She likes things raw.
Is that so?
Imagine what that roast pork's going to be like. We'll all end up with trichinosis.
Yeah. Go ahead.
Mac?
Which one, Mac?
I want two, Joe.
Thank you. Friday talking. Yeah. Oh, yeah, John.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, fine. About 20 minutes. 20 minutes, yeah. Right, thank you.
Anything, Joe?
Wilshire detectives, they got a petty theft suspect out there now named Cecil Grant. Picked him up this morning.
What about him?
Well, he had a $20 bill on him stuffed down in the corner of his pocket.
Yeah?
They checked out the serial number. It's on the list. 6:05 p.m. Frank and I got in the car and drove out to Wilshire Station where we double-checked the serial numbers on the $20 bill taken from the petty theft suspect Cecil Grant. It checked out. The officers at Wilshire Division had already made a run on Grant through R&I, but outside of one other arrest for petty theft, he had no further criminal record. His fingerprints had been checked, but they failed to tie in. The suspect was taken from his cell to the interrogation room where Bill and I questioned him. He talked a lot, but he didn't say much.
Well, now, look, there ain't any reason to get mad. We can settle this thing without a big rhubarb. No reason to get mad.
28 sacks of U.S. mail, mister. A couple of men slugged till they couldn't stand up. We figure that's a good reason.
All right, all right. I know. Why bring your troubles in me? That wasn't in.
You got a piece of the loot, a $20 bill. You had it in your pocket. You admit it's yours.
All right, so what?
The holdup's still fresh. It ties you in close, Cecil. You're warm enough for us.
What do you mean? What are you getting at?
You don't need me to explain it. You got a piece of the loot. You say the bill must have been in your pocket for at least a day.
That's right.
Then it's a good chance you were in contact with the thieves. Either that or you're one of them.
I'm not. You know that. Couldn't have been there. I got an alibi.
Now, face it, Grant. You're not going to alibi that $20 bill. Now, how about it?
I don't know. I told you I don't know.
If it's not your job, you better check us out, Cecil. Robbing the U.S. mail. I think you know what that gets you.
I don't know. Money was in my pocket. I just don't know.
25 years, 30, maybe 35. If you're not in, why fool with it? How about it, Cecil?
I'm not in. You know that.
Then what about the 20? What about it?
Well, this is the way it happened. Guy owed me a 20. He owed it to me for 6 months, maybe more. Tuesday came around, paid off. Gave me that bill you got.
This last Tuesday?
That's right. Thought it was funny, but he's a nice guy. I didn't want to make trouble.
How do you mean?
Well, when he paid me the 20 back, he said, well, look, the bill isn't phony, but don't let it out for a couple of days. Bill's okay, but just sit on it, maybe a week or two. That's just what he told me.
Who was it? Where did we find him?
Well, he's a nice guy, a friend. I don't want to make trouble.
It's already made. Now, what about it?
Johnny Carter, 380 Nashville Avenue, apartment 2.
Listening to Dragnet, authentic stories of your police force in action. Because of its quality, Fatima is the one king-size cigarette that stands out. Here's the practical way to prove that yourself. Compare Fatima with any other king-size cigarette. One, Fatima's length filters the smoke 85 millimeters for your protection. Two, Fatima's length cools the smoke for your protection. Three, Fatima's length gives you those extra puffs. 21% longer than standard cigarette size. Fatima gives you more for your money. And in king-size Fatima, you get an extra mild and soothing smoke, plus the added protection of Fatima quality. Because of its quality, its extra mildness, and superbly blended tobaccos, more and more smokers coast to coast are switching to Fatima every day. Buy Fatima. Your money back plus postage. If you're not convinced, Fatima is better than the king-size cigarette you're now smoking. Just return the pack and the unsmoked Fatimas by August 1st, 1952. Fatima, Box 37, New York 1. Add to your smoking enjoyment. Smoke king-size Fatima. Extra mild and soothing. Plus the added protection of Fatima quality. Get Fatima in the bright, sunny yellow pack. Best of all, king-size cigarettes.
August 7th, Thursday, 6:55 p.m. We called R&I, but they had no make on the name John Carter. My partner, Frank Smith, and I left Wilshire Division and headed out to check on the address given us by the theft suspect, Cecil Grant. The 300 block on Nashville Avenue was in West Hollywood, just below Melrose. Number 380 was an aging two-story apartment house. The architecture was old Spanish, a relic of the mid-20s. The name John Carter appeared on one of the mailboxes, but when we rang, there was no answer. We contacted the apartment manager, and he told us John Carter worked at night at a downtown garage. Along with the manager, we went up to the second floor and checked through the suspect's apartment. We found nothing to indicate that he'd taken part in the mail holdup. After a routine interview with the manager, we got the name and address of the garage where Carter was employed, and we left. 8:23 p.m., we pulled up and parked half a block away from Carter's place of employment, an all-night service garage on South Figueroa. Frank waited in the car, and I headed up the block alone toward the garage. In the event Carter was one of the mail truck holdup men, there was a possibility his two Confederates might be employed at the same place he was. If this was the case, we didn't want to tip him off. Hi.
Yeah. You want something?
Yeah, I do. I need a little help if you got the time.
I don't know. I'm busy right now. What's the matter?
I got my car stalled down the street there. I can't figure out what's wrong. A lousy thing just stopped on me.
All right. Check the gas tank.
Yeah, nothing as simple as that. I got almost a full tank.
Well,
I hate to bother you. You think you could come down and take a look at it? It's not far, just a half a block down the street.
I'm pretty busy. You can see that. I don't know.
Sure appreciate it if you give it a look. I'm not much of a mechanic myself. Probably something real small. My car's almost new.
I don't know. Just a minute. All right. That's going to have to do. It's 2.5 service charge. You have to leave the garage. I guess you know that.
Okay, that's all right with me. I got to get that car started.
You pay in advance. We've had too many hassles on this before.
Okay. There you go.
Yeah, okay. Just down the street, you said?
Yeah, down this way.
Okay.
I don't know what happened to the lousy thing. It just quit on me.
Yeah. Nice night. What'd you do, pound on the gas pedal, flood the carburetor?
No, I don't think so. I kept trying the starter when the thing quit on me. There's an automatic choke on the car, though. Maybe that had flooded. I don't know.
A half a block now. Which one's your car?
Straight ahead there, the gray sedan. This one right here.
Okay, get the hood open.
Well, never mind that, mister. Just get in the car. All right, Frank.
Oh, what's this?
Police officer, this is our identification. Get in the car.
What's the matter? What is it?
Come on, in the car.
Hey, what's the pitch? What's it all about?
Your name, John Carter, address 380 Nashville Avenue.
I don't know what you're talking about.
Is that your name and address?
All right, it is. What about it?
Get him behind you. Help him, Frank.
Yeah.
All right, that's good.
What are you trying to pull? What's this about?
U.S. mail robbery, Carter. I want to talk to you downtown.
I don't know anything about any mail robbery. What are you talking about?
Nothing to worry over. If you're cleared, you'll be back on the job in an hour.
Well, why pick me? I work at garage. It's my bread and butter. Why don't you go ahead and arrest the newsboy down the corner? Same thing.
No, there's a big difference.
Yeah, you name it.
A $20 bill. 9:05 p.m. After checking with the garage manager to make sure none of his employees were possible accomplices of Carter's, we drove the suspect back to the city hall, took him to the interrogation room, and started to question him. In the space of an hour and a half, he gave us three alibis, supposedly accounting for his whereabouts the night of the mail truck robbery. In the same period of time, we checked out each of the three alibis by phone calls. Every one of them was a lie. The questioning went on. 11:30, midnight, 12:30 a.m. We sent out for coffee. 1 a.m., 1:30. We stayed on it. 2 o'clock, 2:30, 3 a.m., it was like any other interrogation. It's a lot tougher to keep asking the questions than to answer them. We were as tired as the suspect, but he had one big advantage. We had to keep pressing, and we couldn't afford to show our fatigue. All he had to do was to say no and refuse to answer the questions. At a few minutes before 5 a.m., we called a halt to the interrogation, but not before we gained a point. Apparently, by a slip of the tongue, Carter gave us the name of the girl he was keeping company with and also her place of employment. After we booked Carter on suspicion of 211 PC, and after we picked up 2 hours sleep, we located the girlfriend, a Grace Nelson, at her place of employment, a telegraph office at Alpine and South Flower.
All I know is I met John about 3 months ago. His family's from Cedar Rapids, same as mine. There's nothing wrong with John I know of.
You know any of his friends, Miss Nelson, any good people he has dealings with?
Not personally, I don't. Heard him talk about some, though. Why, what's the matter?
Do you remember any of the names, Miss Nelson?
Let me see. He's always talking about Sid. I don't know his last name, though. In a way, you'd find him. And then there's Sammy. I don't remember his last name either. Met Sammy once, but I don't know where he stayed.
You notice anything unusual about Mr. Carter the last week or so, ma'am? I mean, anything peculiar, anything out of the ordinary?
Anything peculiar? No, I don't think so. John's been just as nice as ever to me. I like him very much. Matter of fact, he's been nicer than he's ever been.
How do you mean, miss?
Well, for my birthday, I mean, last Wednesday.
Yeah.
Well, he was so sweet about it. I mean, really sweet. He gave me $400. Gave it to me in cash. Told me to go out and buy what I wanted. Wouldn't you say that's sweet?
You any of that money left, Miss Nelson?
Why, yes, of course I have. See, right here in my purse. See, right there. More than half of it.
Carter tell you where he got this money, Miss Nelson?
Gambling game. He said he wanted a card. What's wrong?
Serial numbers, ma'am. This money was taken in a holdup, U.S. mail. We've got a pretty good reason to suspect Carter.
You mean John's a thief? That's how he got the money? I can't believe it.
Right, it's true, ma'am.
So hard to believe. I hope you don't think I had anything to do with it. I mean, robbing people, mails. Are you sure it's John Carter you want?
Yes, ma'am, we're pretty sure. We understand you were pretty close to him. He said the two of you were going to get married.
I don't know. We did have it said at one time, but no, I don't know. I mean, I have people in this town, my whole family. I couldn't let this get out, no.
You're willing to admit the $400 you got came from John Carter, the same bills that he gave him to you?
I don't know. I love John. I don't want to hurt him. I really love him. Tell me the truth. What's going to happen?
Well, he's going to be charged with robbery, ma'am, holding up a U.S. mail truck, taking 28 sacks of registered mail.
John? John Carter?
That's right. Him and two others. I'd like to ask you one more question, miss. Do you have any idea what Carter was up to? The robbery, I mean?
Me? Of course not. No idea at all. I love John. I love him for what I thought he was. Go through anything for him. I love him. Just wouldn't make any sense, though, would it?
Ma'am?
Going to jail for him. Just common sense. Can't love anybody that much.
That afternoon, we had the suspect, John Carter, brought from his cell to the interrogation room where he was confronted with the testimony of both Cecil Grant and Grace Nelson, two of the people he'd given some of the stolen money to. Another hour of interrogation and Carter broke. He admitted taking part in the holdup and gave us the name of his partner. He named as the leader and mastermind of the robbery a Sidney Grover at an address in Highland Park. Frank and I checked it out.
Yeah?
Police officers, you Sidney Grover?
Yeah. I'm not feeling so well. Can't you come back later? Not feeling well at all.
It's kind of important, Grover. Like to talk to you downtown?
Come back later, huh? A little later on. I got so many troubles right now. Please.
Like to talk to you about a holdup, Grover. A mail truck. We got the two men who worked it for you. They gave us the whole story.
Two men? What do you mean? Can't you see I got troubles? Please don't bother me. Come back later, huh? Bad trouble.
You better get your coat, Grover. Got to talk to you downtown.
Look, don't you understand? My son's left me. My only boy. Packed his bag. He walked out. He left me.
Afraid that's your problem, mister.
He said he didn't want any part of me. He had an argument. He didn't like what I was doing. Big argument. He slapped my face, my own boy, and he walked out. Slapped my face.
All right, you want to get your coat?
Yeah, okay. Mail job, is that it? Got the other two?
Yeah, we got them.
All right, no argument. I didn't try to run away. I guess you can see that. My boy said it was a crook. We argued. He slapped me, walked out. How come, Sergeant?
I wouldn't know. Let's go, Grover.
A sour story, huh? Old man trying a mail robbery. I'm 55. I don't look it, do I? Kid slapped my face. He said I was a crook. I couldn't hit him back, my only boy. Wish he hadn't called me a crook. Pretty sour story, isn't it?
Yeah, it's sour. Let's go.
The story you have just heard was true. The names were changed to protect the innocent.
On November 29th, trial was held in Superior Court, City and County of Los Angeles, State of California. In a moment, the results of that trial.
Now, here is our star, Jack Webb.
Thank you, George Fenneman. Friends, there's one thing I'd like you to remember the next time you buy cigarettes. Fatimas give you more for your money. That's because no other king-size cigarette can match Fatima quality, and because Fatima is 21% longer than standard cigarette size. That added length means that Fatima's extra mild and soothing smoke is cooled and filtered for your protection. Get a pack tomorrow and compare them with the cigarettes you've been smoking. Fatima, best of all, king-size cigarette.
Sidney Allen Grover, along with his two accomplices, John Harold Carter and Samuel Maxwell Johnson, were tried and convicted of robbery in the first degree, one count, and assault with a deadly weapon, one count. All three are serving their terms in the state penitentiary. First degree robbery is punishable by imprisonment from 5 years to life. Assault with a deadly weapon is punishable by imprisonment for not less than one, nor more than 10 years. Just heard Dragnet, a series of authentic cases from official files. Technical advice comes from the Office of Chief of Police W.H. Parker, Los Angeles Police Department. Technical advisors, Captain Jack Donahoe, Sergeant Marty Wynn, Sergeant Vance Brasher. Heard tonight were Herb Ellis, Vic Perrin, Inga Hollis. Script by Jim Moser. Music by Walter Schumann. Hal Gibney speaking.
Fatima Cigarettes, best of all, king size.
Yes, that was Dragnet, Big Mail, an original air date of the 15th of May, 1952. Dragnet ran on the radio from 1949 to 1957. At some point, it became concurrent with television. That I forget when that came about, probably just a few years before, because there wasn't too much that was on radio and television simultaneously. Below me is Dwayne Eddy and the Peter Gunn Twist, Henry Mancini song. I think Dwayne Eddy's still alive. That's why I'm playing this. 4 months ago, I ended the show with it because the CD players are goofy here. Anyway, my name is Arthur, and you've been listening to The Grand Hour here on 91.5 FM and or WMFO.org, Medford Tufts Freeform Radio. Thanks.